Welcome back to the Killer Frogs Killer Minute, a Fan Nation college football podcast brought to you weekly by KillerFrogs.com. I am Brett Gibbons, and I'm once again joined by Tori Couch. If this is your first time here on this podcast, Tori may be new to you. And if you're a recurring listener, she's certainly not new to you, but I'm very excited to have her on anyway. Tori, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm excited. College football, we had some games last weekend, more games tomorrow on Thursday. Let's do this.
Yes. Yeah. I'm super excited for today's podcast because we actually get to talk about a football game. Last week, TCU didn't play because it was week zero. You can go ahead and check. Well, I guess you don't want to check that out anymore. It was a preview of week zero. But today we are talking about TCU's week one matchup, the Colorado Buffaloes. And boy, is there a lot of intrigue with it. I guess to start, what's your temperature on this game?
I mean, it's got a lot of attention for a lot of different reasons. And none of it's negative. It's all positive intrigue. Obviously, a big noon kickoff in town. I know we'll talk about that a little bit. You have them in town. You have Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, and everything that surrounds him. And you know, TCU's got some new pieces. So it's just, there's a lot of intrigue around this. And so I think it's a good thing, especially coming off national title game appearance for TCU. All this stuff, just to keep building that momentum, I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, did you see the one that made its way to Twitter was on the WWE broadcast, that goofy promo that they had with Coach Prime riding the Buffalo, and it was really jarring. Did you see that?
Yes. I'm not surprised.
Oh, it's no good.
No, it's not good, but am I surprised that they did that?
No, not really. No, I guess if you spin it that way, I think the original script on what the announcers are supposed to be reading, because I hear every time I see it, I hear an announcer take it a different way and kind of stumble over the same part, in which they say the one of the anticipated, I'm pretty sure the script says the most anticipated college football kickoff, which is like, that is a hyperbole beyond all hyperboles. I don't even think TCU fans are like, this is the most anticipated kickoff, considering the Horned Frogs are a 20.5-point favorite in this game.
Yeah. Might be the most anticipated one in a while for Colorado.
Yeah, since the 90s.
That might be a fair statement.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a lot of intrigue with it. It's not to say that this isn't exciting, intriguing, et cetera, but I don't even think this is the most anticipated game for me personally in this window, in the noon window.
No.
Well, hey, let's get into it. We're talking about TCU versus Colorado. TCU is hosting the Buffs on Saturday at our favorite kick time, 11 a.m. Central. And this will come into play in more ways than one, besides just being the early kickoff that everyone dreads. This game is going to be broadcast on the Fox National Channel. Like you said, big noon kickoff is going to be in town. That's always good for the campus. It's always good to have some of that national exposure. The problem with it being at 11 a.m., though, besides it's a little bit too early for people to really have a good day of tailgating, is that it's going to be 100 degrees plus in the Fort Worth area on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And so this game is taking part right smack dab in the middle of the hottest point of the day. Of course, this is an 11 a.m. kickoff because Fox was able to draft the rights to it when they were doing their picks preseason. That, like I said, plays right in the middle of the heat of the day. To what extent do you believe that the heat will play a factor in this game?
I think in the second half, as the game wears on, you're going to start to see some fatigue on both sidelines. Now, TCU players are a little bit more used to this heat. They've been practicing it now for a month plus, so they're a little more conditioned to it, but I mean, they're still human. Somebody's probably gonna cramp up, something's gonna happen, and I think Colorado players, they come from a higher elevation, but that doesn't necessarily translate to heat, so I think they're gonna have some players that probably cramp up or whatever. So I think you'll see that as the game wears on, especially in the second half. You'll start to see, you know, just almost who can survive, because it's a conditioning issue, but it's also just health and safety too.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I'm glad that you brought up the difference in elevation conditioning versus heat, because at my full-time job, I was having a discussion in a Discord server with somebody about it. And they mentioned, hey, you know, Colorado's been training at elevation. And I'm like, that's kind of a good point. But then I started to think about it, and thin air and super thick, dense, hot air are not the same. I don't believe that those two are playing into each other. Yeah. Otherwise, all the schools from the South, we would have no problem going up to elevation and playing guys there. It's different kind of conditioning. I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah. Well, and I think we saw that play out a little bit last year with the Florida-Utah game.
Yeah.
Utah started to drop like flies. You had guys, you know, bombing on the sidelines, stuff like that. Like, it's different. So I think it'll play an element. I don't think it decides the game per se.
Yeah, I'm with you. And we'll dig into these teams really in depth on each side. I think there's a very, very specific aspect to that game in which this heat is going to affect disproportionately, but we'll get into that. Just to touch on Colorado, we've talked about it a couple of times, and everybody listening here knows the story. They brought in 51 transfers, basically overhauled the entire roster, and a brand new coaching staff. Of course, this is their debut. Their top guys they brought in, Travis Hunter, who's the former number one overall recruit, went to Jackson State with Deion Sanders before transferring with him to Colorado. Primetime son, Shadir Sanders, he's going to be the quarterback, comes in from Jackson State. Alt McCaskill, which I don't know if we talked about him during our transfer portal episode or not. He's a running back from Houston that missed last year with an ACL tear, but before then, 1,000-yard rusher, extremely talented and versatile athlete. He transfers in. I think he is going to be an X factor for them throughout the year. Mm-hmm. And then you have Miles Slusher in the secondary. He's a safety from Arkansas, veteran guy. He has a lot of snaps and a former four-star as well. Like I said, they hired on Deion Sanders. Of course, they bring in Kent State head coach Sean Lewis as offensive coordinator. Now, he ran the sixth fastest offense of the country last year in terms of seconds per play. That was his MO. Score 55 points, run faster than everybody else, be better conditioned than everybody else in the MAC, and win some football games. And it worked sometimes, and it didn't work sometimes, depending on who he had on his sideline. But I think the best thing about all of these moves is that Colorado's back in the national conversation. And mm-hmm. I'm never, ever, mm-hmm. ever going to say it's a bad thing when a team is in the national conversation. I like it. I like the, it's going to be must-watch TV, if nothing else, especially with their high-profile offense there. TCU on the other side, they only returned 41% of their offensive production. That's 10th least nationally. Chandler Morris is rising at quarterback. They hired Ken O'Brien as offensive coordinator. If you'd like to hear a complete rundown on TCU Horned Frogs, Tori and I actually talked about it a couple episodes back that you're more than welcome to go listen to. But I do want to start with the TCU offense matching up against Colorado's defense. In my opinion, we have not seen them play yet, and there's a lot of different transfers, so it's going to be different. Yep. I believe the weakness of this Colorado defense is up front. I don't have any doubt about that. Their defensive line and their linebackers, not great in my estimation. I could be proven wrong, though. I expect TCU to be able to move the line of scrimmage and be able to rush the football with Trey Sanders, Imani Bailey, all those guys. Here's a fun stat for you, though, and I love looking at this. Average weights. The average weight of TCU's offensive line, 325 pounds. They're a pretty big unit, which is good for moving people. Colorado's defensive front averages 272 pounds. That's a 50-pound per player difference. That's the issue I have, is they are simply outsized. The strength of Colorado on their defense is in the secondary. Travis Hunter, the number one former recruit cornerback. Cormani McClain was the number one cornerback recruit in the 2023 cycle. He joins on. Miles Slusher, a four-star recruit. He's got 22 games of experience in the secondary. There is some athletes here, and they do have some depth. It might be the only unit on the team that has a lot of depth is that secondary.
Yeah.
Phil Steele ranks the defensive line and linebackers the second worst in the Pac-12. That's what I was getting out, the weak defensive front. And this is, the conference isn't exactly a murderer's row of front seven talent. This isn't the SEC or the Big Ten we're dealing with here. Chandler Morris, I thought he looked average. When we talked about him briefly, you thought he looked average or had some struggles against Colorado's defense last year, and that team was much, much worse. I've done a lot of talking. I'd like to let you do a lot of the talking now. Do you have any concerns about Chandler Morris in this game?
I think my biggest concern is, does he look like he did last year? That's my biggest concern. If he looks flustered, and yes, he completes passes and whatever, but if he looks flustered or just uncomfortable, that's where I'm going to have some concern. Now, that was a year ago. He's had a year to learn. He's got a new offensive coordinator. It's a different line. It's a different team as far as the offense goes, very different offense. So maybe he comes out and he's not stellar, but he's steady. He's good. He's confident. And I think for me, that's the biggest thing. Even if, you know, the old saying, fake it until you make it. Even if he is a little unsure, but he looks confident, your mind can play tricks on you. So if he looks confident, he'll play confident. And I think for me, that's my biggest concern with Morris in this game is just how does he look coming out of the gate? Does he look timid, unsure, or does he look confident and kind of gets better as the game goes on?
Now, was it discomfort last year because of pressure from the defensive line? Was it maybe a little bit of an offensive line thing, or was he just not reading the field very well?
A little bit of everything. I didn't think he read the field particularly well. And again, the line took some time to gel. I'm not putting it all on any one person or any one thing. I think it was a little bit of everything last year. So that's something like, again, he's a year older. He's had time to work with these guys. He knew back in the spring that he was probably going to be the number one guy. He didn't have to go through quarterback battle and, you know, find out later in fall camp. So maybe he's got a bit more confidence. I think it was a combination of things, but I didn't feel like he read the field particularly well last year.
Well, hopefully with another offseason in the Sonny Dykes system, because even though there is a new offensive coordinator, it's primarily Sonny Dykes' offensive system. And then those offensive coordinators coming to put their own spin on it. Hopefully in year two, there's a little bit more familiarity, maybe a little bit more confidence, like you were saying, being able to read the field well. If you had to pick one X factor in this game specifically on TCU's offense, who would it be?
I think I'm going to go with Chandler Morris. You know, I know quarterback's the easy one, but I think they're going to feed off of him. Quarterbacks are seen as a leader. You know, TCU is so used to Max Duggan. He was the emotional leader and all these things. Are they going to look to Morris for that leadership? And so I think, again, just what kind of poise, how does he carry himself, and how that feeds the rest of the team? And then kind of secondarily to that, how's the offensive line doing? Are they able to push that defensive line kind of like we expect? Are they giving him time? Are they giving him the ability to make the reads and do things that he needs to do? But I want to see what Chandler Morris can do.
Now, if we have to project a little bit, what is the best case scenario for this offense come Saturday? What does that look like?
I think it's clicking right away. You know, comes out looking like, okay, they're just kind of not picking up where things left off per se, but they've got a good flow feel for what they're doing. The offensive line is getting a good push, receivers running sharp routes, Morris is able to hit them where they like the ball, handoffs are good, running backs are finding the holes, breaking off medium size, long size, just breaking off those runs. I think that's the best case scenario, is things just kind of click.
I will go as far as to say, in my opinion, the best case scenario is that TCU scores on every drive. I think the capability is there. I don't think that Colorado's all really that good. That's going to be a trend throughout this podcast in my assessment of this game. But I do think that TCU has the ability to score on every drive. And I don't just mean kicking a field goal here and there. I believe they can find the end zone. I believe they can find pay dirt every single drive. You get 8-9 drives, you draw them out, and you can score 55 plus. I think that is in the cards. Now, the other way, the side people don't want to hear, what is the worst case scenario for TCU's offense in this game?
I think kind of just opposite what you said, they can't find the end zone. They cannot complete drives. And I think when I think about, you know, okay, you're coming in with a lot of just newness, it might take a quarter or two for things to click to, you know, you might only get one touchdown drive in the first half, but you've made some good strides. You've done things in the second half. It all comes together and you string together a bunch of touchdown drives. So I think the worst case is you're not completing those touchdown drives or you're settling for field goals or you're not scoring. And then you don't see an improvement in the second half from what you did in the first half. Things just kind of either stay the same or they take a step back. And Colorado is somehow either imposing their will or they're getting turnovers, they're being opportunistic, and they're putting the TCU offense back on their heels and giving Colorado's offense that opportunity to score, you know, and do those things that we saw TCU do some last year that kept them in games that, okay, maybe we shouldn't have, like Michigan game. TCU was in that game because they got some turnovers. And so I think that's one of the worst case scenarios for TCU and against Colorado is Colorado starts getting some turnovers and rattles the offense and puts them on their heel.
Yeah, I think that turnover, a nightmare scenario for me, like if we had to really pick playing it out, making a vivid image, is TCU comes out on that first drive and turns the ball over right away. Mm-hmm. Colorado is mm-hmm. able to go down and score, because I do think that Colorado's offense will be able to move the football a little bit. They're going to run fast, and they have athletes get to the ball to the perimeter and be able to move it around. So I would hate to see an early turnover, Colorado get on the board early, because this group, and I don't know them personally. I have not been at their practices. I don't know the individual personalities of these players, but this group, especially how new they are with all their transfers, feels like a team that you don't want to give a lot of confidence to. You want to take that confidence mm-hmm. away early, because once you mm-hmm. get that confidence going a little bit, they're going to play with their tails on fire, and there's a chance that they could stay in this game, even give TCU some fits. But if you take that confidence away right away out of the gate, this feels like a team that's not really, you know, they don't have a lot of team chemistry. So they're, how are they going to respond? How are they going to be able to overcome adversity? Yep. If you give them adversity right away, give them opportunities right away, I think there's two very different ways this game could play out.
Mm-hmm.
At what point in the game would you be concerned with TCU's offense? And let's change up the scenario. Let's not say they come out and throw a first drive pick. When would you say, okay, I'm a little concerned about this?
I think I alluded to it a little bit, but I think if it's you're in that third quarter and you're still not looking like you've found a rhythm. And again, things do not have to be perfect in that third quarter by any stretch. But if you're not making improvements, if you still look a little scattered and you're just not finding that rhythm, that's where I start to have some concerns. Because I think they're going to see a lot of things in that first half that are going to, they'll make those adjustments and be able to play better in the second half. Because you can kind of determine what they're going to do on defense based on who their coordinator is and their strengths and things like that. But there's no tape on this defense. There's zero tape on Colorado. So you're going to have some bumps along the way in the first half, but if you can be a little more consistent in the second half, that's where my concern would be, is if we're not seeing an upward trend as far as the offensive performance.
I want to go to the other side of the football. Now I want to talk TCU's defense against Colorado's offense, because I actually think this is the more interesting of the discussions, at least in my opinion here. Like on offense, I think TCU should be able to control the line of scrimmage. They have better size and athletes up front. I don't think Colorado's offensive line is really built with a lot of depth at all. And I think it lacks a top-end talent. And you can ask any mm-hmm. offensive line coach or any offensive lineman, the key to a good offensive line is communication and team chemistry. You got to be able to move as a unit, communicate, pick things up. That takes time. This team has not had a lot of time, and their defense on practice sure isn't giving them the kind of looks that they're going to be getting against TCU in this game. So I think TCU has a huge advantage at the line of scrimmage yet again. While I do think that Sean Lewis's system will help them in the long run, I think if you're undersized, outmanned, the best way to win is to run fast and get the ball to the perimeter and put defenders in a conflict, is what I like to say. But this game, this might be an issue. We talked about it. 100-plus degrees, you're running your guys super fast. You don't have a lot of depth, and you don't have a lot of rotators. So I think that there could be an issue. You said it's not necessarily a conditioning issue. I agree. But an issue with guys being conditioned to be able to play 78 plays in 100 degrees. We'll see about that. I'm not sure. I'm also not entirely convinced that Shedeur Sanders is a great quarterback. He's good. His tape is good. He's solid at Jackson State. He was a mm-hmm. three-star recruit, so he's not, you know, some nobody. But I don't know if he's good enough to overcome talent deficiencies around him and carry the team. Like, Caleb Williams, if he was put on a team with no talent, would still be a star, and they would still score a ton of points because he is a superstar. I don't believe Shedeur Sanders is at that level. And of course not. It's a Heisman winner. That's just an extreme example of what I'm talking about. Travis Hunter, he's noteworthy because he plays both ways. He is as noteworthy as a wide receiver as he is as a defensive back, mm-hmm. extremely effective on both sides. He is going to be a problem for everybody. Josh Newton will probably see a lot of him, but he's going to give Josh Newton all he can handle. Again, number one recruit in the country for a reason. Mm-hmm. He was going to go to Florida State and probably be a star at Florida State. It didn't really matter where he was. Along with him, Jimmy Horn, he's a pretty good athlete. His teammate, Xavier Weaver, came in. They're both from USF. But to be honest, USF isn't a high-level program. They weren't very good. So if these guys are like USF, level players, then they're going to be what the industry calls just a guy, Jags, against competition like TCU. They're just going to fall into the fold. They're just players. I don't think they're going to be stars there. TCU secondary is definitely the strength of this team. We've talked about it. I think they match up really nicely with Colorado because they have that strength in the secondary, and that's matched up against Colorado's strength in their receiving core. I'm not sure McCaskill plays, and if he does, I don't know if he's at 100%. It's really hard to find appropriate and correct injury news on college football. It's very, yes. It's difficult to find, right? He's still recovering from an ACL injury last year, so I don't know if he goes. I don't know if he goes 100%. Not really sure what to make of it there, but he is a good player, so he will impact the game if he plays. But again, like the other side, I think this side of the ball is actually more lopsided in TCU's favor because I think they have more rotators. I think they're matched up correctly, and they still have the size and talent in the front seven that should be able to overcome Colorado's offensive line or lack thereof or something. I know I'm being kind of harsh on that. But if you had to pick an X factor on TCU's defense in this game, who's it going to be?
I think it's that defensive line. Can you get that push, and can you make Shadir uncomfortable? Now, what's interesting when you talk about Shadir is he's the more experienced quarterback of the two teams. I don't, you know, kind of like you said, is that enough to overcome some of the other problems he might run into? I don't know, because again, he's not played at this level, so we don't know how that's going to translate. But I think if that defensive line can get a push, get him out of the pocket, and make him a little uncomfortable, I think that's going to help, because then the DBs can feel more comfortable to make a play on the ball and things like that. It just breeds confidence on your defense. So I'm going to look at that line to see what they can do.
As a three-star, he projects to be a starter on a high-level Group of Five team or a backup on a mid-level Power Five, maybe a starter in the occasional Power Five spot. You're looking at teams like maybe like Stanford that, you know, doesn't have a lot of quarterback depth there. And he would be in the running for the starting quarterback position this year at TCU. I mean, that's kind of level Shadir Sanders is at. But he's not a locked and loaded starter. My background is in recruiting college football players, and he's not a football player. If you take his family lineage out of it, and I'm not saying he wouldn't be any sort of athlete without that. That's just not true. But he would be somebody that I would have looked at during my time at Texas State. Now, when you work at a Texas State or a Bowling Green, you have a level of guys where you're like, okay, they've been offered by TCU. They've been offered by Oklahoma. We're not going to look into them because we're not going to land them. But a three-star guy that may not have those kind of offers, Shadir Sanders is a guy that I'd probably recommend Texas State to recruit. Again, if he didn't come with the big name Sanders and be recruited by a bunch of bigger schools because of his connections there, right? Florida State, Jackson State in the case that he went to. That's my personal assessment of him. Good player, starter level player, yes, not a game breaker. If I had to pick out an X factor on TCU's defense, I say Josh Newton. If we can take away Travis Hunter, I think that takes a lot of confidence away from the quarterback. And all of a sudden now he's got to go to option 2 and 3. And I would love to see what that's like, because mm-hmm. when he was playing at Jackson State, he didn't have that problem a lot. There weren't a lot of games in which he couldn't go mm-hmm. to Travis Hunter at will. You saw a game against NC Central where they tied it up late. It was a ball to Travis Hunter. That was the play. Nobody else had to run a route. So I want to see what happens if they're able to take him away. I think Josh Newton is talented enough to match up pretty well. But again, he's going to have his hands full. There's no doubt there.
Oh, yeah.
Best case scenario for this defense, what does that look like?
You're getting the pressure, and you're getting a couple turnovers, and you're slowing down, like we talked about, a super fast offense, an offense that relies on speed. If you can slow them down and get them out of what they want to do, I think that's your best case scenario. They're going to score. You can't get upset if they score. That's just going to happen. But if you can make it so it's, you know, once every four drives, you're in pretty good shape. So I think the best case scenario is just slowing them down, getting pressure on Sanders, making him show, okay, what level of quarterback are you? And just making them make mistakes.
How about the other way? Worst case scenario for this side of the ball?
I think the worst case is they're not able to get the pressure that they want to. Travis Hunter is able to kind of take advantage of Josh Newton, you know, play outmaneuver him. Sanders is better than we think, and he's able to kind of, even if there are O-line issues, dance around, run the ball, you know, and do those types of things. I think the worst case scenario is TCU's defense just makes a lot of mistakes. You know, I feel like that's how, not that Colorado can't move the ball against this defense, but I think that's probably the worst case scenario is TCU makes their own mistakes and kind of helps Colorado out.
I was getting I was flipping through the Phil Steele magazine, trying to get a size check on the two, and they're pretty similar in size. Josh Newton's 6 foot, he's listed at 185 pounds. Travis Hunter, 6'1", he's listed at 165 pounds. I don't know if that's 100% what he's playing at, but he's a super, super fast player. So there's no size disadvantage there. I'm with you. If you get Travis Hunter rolling, they're picking up first down, chewing a little bit of clock maybe. Yep. I do believe that's when you get the worst case scenario. But I really don't see Colorado scoring more 30. Probably not that. So if you can get 30, you probably win this football game, just because, again, they don't have the depth, and I don't think they have the high end talent throughout that offensive unit to be able to regularly score. But like you said, if you let them hang around, my philosophy is teams that let other teams hang around lose in the long term. If you let teams that are worse than you hang around, that is a problem, and you are going to lose football games that you should not lose. It's a problem across the NFL. It's a problem across college, mm-hmm. especially. So do not let this team hang around. Shut it down. Don't let them get a little bit of confidence and momentum, because then you're going to be playing catch up on one of the fastest offenses in the country. I asked you this on the offense. I'm going to ask you this on the defense as well. What point of the game would you be concerned with TCU's defense?
I think I'm going to be going a little bit earlier, or probably somewhere in that second quarter, if they're not imposing their will, shutting down the routes. Again, Travis Hunter's a little bit of an exception there just because he is so big and they match up so well. But if you're not starting to do what you want to do on defense in the second quarter, that's where I'm going to start to have concerns, especially because this is year two under Gillespie. This is not all new. Most of these guys are returning, or at least have experience in this system. So you know what to do. And again, there's no tape on Colorado. You can look at some Jackson State stuff. That's not a 100% accurate picture. So I think second quarter for me is kind of that benchmark of, okay, what is the defense doing? You know, and if it's trending in the right direction, I'm not going to be too concerned.
I'm actually going to go earlier. I'm going to have a shorter leash. I'm going to say second drive. If you come out and they hit you in the mouth and they score on that first drive, okay. It's week one. Hello, wake up. Welcome to college football. It's time to play, guys. Here we go, especially with a lot of new starters filling in. But if they come back out in that second drive and they methodically move that ball down the field, or quickly move that ball down the field, then I'm going to be a little bit concerned. Because again, TCU is a 20.5-point favorite. My numbers that ruin football in front of me say TCU should be favored by about 23 points. This isn't a team that you should let hang around and hang in there. You should start to see that separation after the first couple of drives. 14-0, 14-3, 21-7. Those are the kind of separations we need to see first, early, second quarter, or otherwise it's like guys, what are we doing here? We don't want a pull away late scenario against a team that, by my estimation, is not a top 90 program in the country. And I'm not alone on that. I know the numbers don't really have a firm grasp on bringing in 51 new players, but again, this is a lot of FCS guys coming up to Power 5. This is a lot of Group of 5 guys coming up to Power 5. I really think you have to jump on it. By that second drive, if TCU's defense is letting them have what they want, I think I'm going to hit the concerned button, not the panic button, but the concerned button at that point. Who on Colorado, if you had to pick one player that makes the biggest impact on this game, who would it be? And I'm going to have one caveat, because there's a super obvious answer. I'm going to take the super obvious answer away. If it's not Travis Hunter, who do you think it's going to be?
Dang it, you took away my answer. No. Gosh, no. And I think that makes it a little bit harder. I think I'm going to go with Shadir, because he's the other big name that came in the portal. I mean, they picked up some other big names that we've talked about. They brought in at least on the defensive line. Let me pull up my notes really quick. Jordan Dominick from Arkansas. So they've got some experience and some names. He was third in the SEC in sacks last season. But I'm going to look at Shedeur Sanders, because that offense, if they can move the ball, if he can kind of do what he wants to do, Colorado's going to stay in this game. That's just going to give them confidence. You know, you've talked a lot, and I completely agree about, if you give them just the slightest bit of hope, they're going to feed on that, and it's going to blossom. Especially, this is week one, no injuries. Big noon kickoff is there. They're all pumped up because, you know, the numbers say they're not going to be good. All these things that they're going to take as locker room material, you give them that hope, they're going to take it and run with it. And I think Sanders is the guy who can kind of help push that through on offense. So I'm curious, like you talked about it, how is he going to translate to the Power Five? You know, is he truly what his recruiting says, which is he could compete at the Power Five, but, you know, be solid but not great? Or is he better than that?
I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going to take multiple guys, but one of the following, be it Jimmy Horn, Xavier Weaver, or really any of the other guys in the receiving core that are not Travis Hunter, because Travis Hunter, let's say he's taken away, or he's playing a lot of snaps on defense, so they have to give him breathers, or worst case scenario, God forbid, he gets injured. Can Colorado's offense still operate without him, be it game planned out of the game or taken out of the game? Can somebody else step up and have and be a threat? Because I'll be honest, I'm already pretty pessimistic about Colorado, but you take away Travis Hunter, I have absolutely no hope for this offense to score. I think if you take away their best player, they're done. They're out. Especially with Alton McCaskill maybe not being at 100% because of last year's injury. So I think the biggest impact on the game is going to be whoever the number two receiver is, and whether or not he can keep that offense operating should the alpha be taken out of it. Colorado fans are probably like, you know what? We just hope not to get to that point. And I don't blame you. It's like going to TCU last year and saying, well, what if Max Duggan doesn't get things going? Well, then that's going to be, yeah, of course. Right. Like, you know, you want your best player to be the best player. So I'm with there. Okay. We've broken it down on offense and defense and a whole bunch of information. Now I want your official game prediction.
I'm picking TC to win for all the reasons that we've talked about. Particularly, I don't think Colorado has a lot of depth. Now, I think that comes into play more because of weather, not because of the injuries. If this was week six, that's a different discussion.
Yeah.
But I'm going to pick TCU. That being said, the margin of victory, I wouldn't be shocked by too many things. I can see a blowout. I can see somewhere in that 21-14, you know, 2-3 scores. Or I could see something where TCU has to make a play in the fourth quarter because they've let Colorado hang around, and Colorado has some talented pieces, and maybe they've got some turnovers and been opportunistic. So I'm not going to be too shocked by many margin of victories that we might see. But I am picking TCU. I'm going to go TCU 37, Colorado 20, kind of going with that middle range of, I think at halftime is going to be close. TCU is going to make their adjustments. They just have less questions. They've got a little more time together. And then they'll be able to pull away in the second half, make it a little more comfortable.
I'm going to go with the blowout. I'm going to go TCU 45-14. I don't believe that Colorado is going to be able to score at will. I just don't. They don't have the depth. When you control the line of scrimmage, when you take away confidence early, and you're used to the 100-degree weather, unlike Colorado coming down, I think there's a huge edge for TCU, especially at home. I'm going to take them in a blowout, 45-14. Now, before we get out of here, I want to talk about some of the other games. And not in depth, we're just going to do a quick pick 'em. We're going to have four games here. You and I will both pick a winner, and I'm going to log it all year long. We'll give a sentence or two in reasoning, little bit of national games, a little bit of local Texas games. Going to try to keep this as engaging as possible for those listening. I do want to start with probably the marquee matchup, maybe if not of the complete weekend, of at least a Thursday, Friday slate. We have Florida at Utah. What is your pick?
I'm going to pick Utah somewhat confidently. If Cam Rising plays, I have a lot more confidence in that pick. But kind of like you mentioned earlier, injuries are so nebulous now in college football. So we don't know if their quarterback's going to play. But I'm going to pick Utah mainly because it's a home game.
I'm also going to go with Utah in the revenge spot. From everything I've heard and looking at sports betting markets and odds and things like that, I'm pretty confident Cam Rising does not play in this game. And the backup, Brandon Rose, got hurt in camp. Now, Bryson Barnes comes out as the quote-unquote third string, who came in and actually performed pretty well in two Rose Bowls. So I think he can keep it afloat. I think they're better up front. Florida is an absolute mess, not just as a team this year, but as a program, I believe. I think that they can run the ball and effectively win this game at home. Rice-Eccles Stadium, one of the most difficult environments in the country to play in, particularly tonight. So I'm taking Utah. I picked this one because it's near and dear to your heart. Boise State at Washington.
I know. I saw that. I was like, ah, darn it.
And it's a great game. There's two reasons.
Oh, no. It's. I think it'll be a really good game. I'm going to pick Washington. I mean, I love Boise State. That's my hometown team. In past years, I probably would have picked Boise State. I just don't think they've got the line and some of the players to beat Washington right now. That's not to say I don't think they won't be good this year. I think they have a chance to win the Mountain West for sure. But I just think Washington is a better overall team. And they're being talked about potentially as a playoff contender. I just don't see Boise State beating them.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to pick Washington. If I had to underthink it, it's that Boise State lost JL Skinner and Caleb Biggers in their secondary. Do you have a guy that can guard Rome Odunze and Jalen McMillan both? I don't know if they have one to guard one or the other, much less both. Right. So I'm going to take Washington there. Michael Penix Jr., prolific Heisman contender. Cal at North Texas. This one's interesting. Cal at North Texas, to be clear, not the other way around.
Yeah, and then I don't know, this is one I'm not 100% confident in this one. I'm going to go with Cal, mainly just because they have nothing after that. They don't know what next year brings, so they're all in this year, as you would think they're all in this year as far as, well, every game is kind of it. But I'm not overly confident in this pick.
For the TCU tie-in on this one, Sam Jackson was a prolific recruit that TCU brought in. He is now the starting quarterback for Cal this year, which is great to see. So you'll see him in action in Denton, if you so care, to drive 45 minutes north. I am going to take North Texas. The point spread has been moving away from Cal for some time. Like you said, they're really uncertain about their future. Justin Wilcox could be canned at the end of this year. I tend to fade programs that are uncertain and noisy and things like that. And right now, Cal kind of is like, oh boy, I don't know. Now, I like your reasoning about, hey, we have nothing left to play for. Let's leave it all out there. And they're not ending as a program, right? But
no,
just to say that, like, hey, we're just going to give it our all this year because it's our last year in the Pac-12. I think that's going to come into play certainly against Oregon, against Washington. I don't know about it, North Texas. Cal returns home and plays Auburn next week, so potential look-ahead spot. And it's not called Apogee Stadium anymore, I think. They changed it, I think, before this year.
Yes, and I'm blanking on it, but it's TC...
Credit Union.
Credit Union, yes, because I was like, it was the acronym was TCU, and people were like, why did they name this after TCU? And I was like, oh, it's a credit union.
Yeah, something. Yeah, they're all changing to credit unions, but I love the stadium design. I've been to many games there. I really like North Texas. I'm sorry, it is not the most daunting environment to play in. Some would almost call it sleepy. I think it's a trap spot. I'm picking North Texas. Let's bring it on.
All right.
I think North Texas can win this game. And then I would say probably the blockbuster of the weekend is playing out on Sunday night. Was an instant classic last year. We're getting a run back. Mm-hmm. Florida State versus LSU.
I'm going to go with LSU. It is in Baton Rouge. That place is so hard to play in.
I have to correct you here. It's actually in Orlando. Oh, it's a neutral site.
Is it
Orlando? Game.
It's neutral site. My bad. Mm-hmm. My bad.
Nope, that's okay.
Still going to go with LSU. I think Brian Kelly has something going there. And they are on a mission this year. not just to win the SEC, their division and the SEC, but they are on a mission to get to the playoffs and look good doing it. A win like this is exactly what they need to impress the committee. People are saying, oh, they could lose it, win the SEC and still get in. There's probably some truth to that. But why leave it to chance? I see LSU coming out swinging. Not to say Florida State won't be either, but I think there's a lot riding on this. And I love what Brian Kelly's doing there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to take LSU. Two loaded teams that got better in the transfer portal. Two really high expectations on these teams. But when we're talking about everything else, I'm going to take the SEC team. It's almost a system play for me. If two teams are fairly even, I'm taking the SEC team almost every time. LSU is just a tick better than Florida State. And I'm all aboard the Florida State train this year. I think they're going to be excellent. But yeah, LSU. I'm going to take LSU in that game as well. But thank you so much for tuning in to the Killer Frogs Killer Minute College Football Podcast. Find us at killerfrogs.com or on Twitter at Killer Frogs. I am at Road to CFB, and you can find Tori at ToriCouch_TX. Continue the conversation over on Facebook. If you want to play Pick'em along with us, please let me know. If you disagree with some of our Pick'ems, let us know too. Chime in on this. I know you have opinions about Colorado at TCU. We finally get to see the Horned Frogs play in 2023. I know you're excited about it. I know you have opinions. Please let us know over on Facebook in the comments. If you liked what you heard, feel free to subscribe to us on your podcasting app of choice on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever app you're using these days, and drop us a review, as that's going to be the best way to help us grow and reach more college football fans, Big 12 fans, and most importantly, TCU fans. Check back in next week for another episode of the Killer Frogs College Football Podcast. I am Brett Gibbons. That is Tori Couch, and we'll catch you all next time.